Hello, and welcome to the Conversations with East Side podcast. East Side Church is a six-year-old urban church plant here on the east side of Atlanta, Georgia, and we serve an eclectic community of worshipers. My name is Ed, and I'm a member here at East Side. Today I have Tim Lloyd, the lead pastor of our church, and we will be discussing core groups. Hallowed be thy name. So Tim, what is the purpose of core groups?
Well, Ed, I'm glad you asked, and it's good to be here with you. And just a couple quick upfront pieces of information that I think would be helpful. So this podcast developed out of a discussion that Ed and I were actually having. Historically, our core groups have focused in on asking questions and going deeper in the sermons, and which is great. But we thought for this semester of core groups, we might try something a little bit different and create this podcast to give some folks in the groups some different and some deeper topics of conversation. So that being said, what is a core group? At Eastside, we have always sort of set out to have a simple church model. Many of us who started the church had come from more traditional churches that were just overburdened with programming, and we wanted to be a church that focused in on a few things and did them well. So kind of from the start, we focused heavily on Sunday worship. We focused heavily on core groups throughout the week. And essentially what a core group is a smaller group of Eastsiders, roughly 12 people, who get together midweek to study, to pray, to do life together, be in relationship with one another, and to care for one another. And we've had them from the beginning. They've gone through a few different names, and core groups are what we've landed on because we believe that they're sort of the core backbone of the congregation. And here at Eastside, we have sort of lived into a semester approach to groups where we sort of ramp them up late summer, and those groups stay together through the fall, and then we ramp up again in January, and then those groups will stay together for that second semester, and then the summers we take a couple months off to sort of regroup. But what are groups and why do we do them? And for us, we take it all the way back to the Gospels. We take it back to Jesus. If you look at his life and his ministry, he had lots of disciples, hundreds probably of disciples, if not more. But in the Gospels, we see that Jesus focused in on 12 individuals, and that was sort of his way of reconstituting the nation of Israel. If you remember, there were 12 tribes, so he picked 12 men to invest in heavily and to invest in deeply.
That was his core group.
That was his core group, right? Exactly, the 12 disciples. And so as you read the Gospels, you see him teaching and training and working with these individuals. And essentially after his ascension, he hands the church off to these 12 people. And they are the catalyst that ends up growing what we're still doing 2,000 years later. So Jesus' core group was like the core group that got Christianity off the ground. So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
Eastside Church is a United Methodist congregation, and many people don't realize this, but Methodism was never an attempt to start a new denomination. It was actually a movement within the Anglican Church. John Wesley was an Anglican priest, and in the 1700s, he had become very frustrated with the religion of his day. The Anglican Church and English culture and politics had all kind of become enmeshed, and the church had really become something you were just sort of born into, and it was just sort of the fabric of society. But there was no passion, there was no intensity of following Jesus. So John Wesley and his brother Charles, they had a fire in their belly, and they essentially gathered together a small group of students when they were studying at Oxford, and they basically reconstituted the original idea of core groups. And they would get together, and they would study, and they would pray, and they would celebrate the sacraments. And then they would go out, and they would serve the poor in the streets of England. And that is sort of the original sort of catalyst for what the Methodist movement was. And they were pejoratively called Methodists because they were so rigorous and so devoted. Every day they would get together and do this work, and their peers mockingly called them Methodists because they had such a rigorous pattern to what they were doing.
Methodical.
Methodical. And
interesting. And I think what's interesting to me about that is that doesn't sound too different from in many ways where we are in the church today, in the Western church today, you know, and sort of nominalism in mainline American churches I can think of.
And I think that, you know, we're in a unique place at Eastside working with, you know, millennials and younger people to sort of tell a different story about what the church can be and what the church should be.
And I think in a conversation of smaller groups, really with an emphasis on, like you said, devotion and on service, the whole idea of bringing us back to the original purpose of the church as a whole, right? And to sort of be the living body of an embodiment of Christ through the Holy Spirit in the world. And I think that that's that being at the core of kind of the Methodist movement, and that's really interesting. Yeah.
And that we're so key movement, right? Like churches so often want to become static. They want to become institutional. But what Wesley did so well was he spread that fire that was in his belly into all these other, he would start these groups and then move on. And eventually the groups made their way over to American soil and radicalized, in a good way, American Christianity of the time. And to the point where, you know, the Methodist movement was so passionate, it was one of the first groups that made it to the West Coast. And we have some of the oldest churches on American soil are Methodist churches for that reason. It's just fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
The groups create movement, and I think that's one of the things that, you know, at Eastside, it's our hope that, you know, we can get more into this, but that being a part of a core group will help Eastside as a whole not become a static entity, but will keep our church moving and keep our church breathing and alive and creating new relationships and having new groups that are doing new things and serving in new ways. So, you know, it's always this sense of like every semester we're creating this whole new fresh experience that we hope folks are jumping into and being a part of.
And how does that, I'm just interested to get your personal color commentary on this, because you were there at the beginning of the church, because you helped, you know, you really began the church. what, of Eastside Church, that is, what, how does, you know, the vision for core groups compare to some of those like first meetings at the very beginning of Eastside Church, and, you know, the feel of those even worship sessions and meeting together with your core team that was planting the church, and I've heard you describe in the past, you know, like the just a lot of really engaged people serving a lot at kind of the beginning of the church and establishing some of the DNA, you know. What was that like as sort of the first core group, being the very genesis of the church?
Yeah, I mean, it was nothing short of divinely ironic that we started with about 12 people. And that was not intentional. That's just who God brought together, this small group of us who pretty much did everything in the pre-launch phase of the church. And from, you know, the worship ministry to, you know, logistics, we had this small group of folks, and we would meet once a month. And we did that for about, I want to say we started meeting once a month in September of 2010, and then the church didn't publicly launch until August of 2011. So we had been together for quite a while. And interestingly, I mean, the majority of that group is now dispersed and are serving in other churches. Some of those people are now full-time pastors, and it's been really cool to see how we've sent those people forth, and now there's this whole new group of people that we're organizing around.
But. Yeah, and I love what you said earlier about core groups kind of keeping things fresh, right?
Right.
I think that it's interesting because we're a six-year-old church plant, urban church plant, that has had sort of various moments of rebooting, you know, like moving into a new space. And I think that as an entire church, we're not a huge church, but there is still that danger of institutionalization, right? There's always that danger. It's just around the corner, and we can throw, you know, the Anglican Church under the bus and Greek Orthodox Church under the bus, and we can, you know, throw shade on mega churches today. But at the end of the day, you know, even getting to like 50, 60, 70, 80 people, there is this idea that, you know, because old habits die hard,
right?
You can participate by being a spectator, right?
Absolutely.
And just kind of show up and leave. And that danger is human, you know. I think I think core groups and unlock this other dimension of engagement with a smaller group of people. And, you know, I always like to say it's kind of where church happens. You know, it's where you really are living life together, like you said, and studying and praying for one another and serving together. I think that that's absolutely right.
And I would say, yeah, it's where I see it as, you know, I always harp back to this axis of love that you see in Jesus' teachings, where Jesus gets asked to sum up the law, right? Which is like this ridiculous thing. You know, if you read Leviticus, you know, there's a lot of law in the Old Testament.
Yeah.
But Jesus cuts through all of it, and he just says, okay, you want me to sum it up? Love God with the entirety of your being and your life, and love your neighbor at least as much as you love yourself. And so I see when we gather on Sunday mornings, we're seeking as a community to, yes, receive from God and to experience God, but we're also gathering to bring God joy. And I think that's, you know, we're worshiping God. We're offering ourselves to God. So that's that vertical axis of bringing our whole selves when we gather for corporate worship. Then I think we have this incredible need for this regular institutionalized opportunity, sure, if you will, for horizontal connection with those who we're worshiping with. And that's what one of the huge things that core groups do is it allows for a structured way for Eastsiders to come together in smaller circles to love one another horizontally and to practice this love access in an intimate community for a season.
I love that. I think that's spot on. A lot of times we hear those commandments and we're like, okay, worship, love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, love one another, you know, as we would love ourselves. And interestingly, a couple Sundays ago, somebody had come in and was a guest preacher. Her name is escaping me right now.
Dr. Karen Scheib.
Yeah.
She taught me pastoral care at Candler.
And she actually talked about, you know, what it really meant to love one another as you love yourself and how you have to kind of love you, what it means to love yourself in order to love other people. And it was really good. I think what's interesting about that is you hear these sermons and you hear that commandment go out and you start to kind of take inventory across your whole life. And you're like, well, who else can I love? Like, you know, I love myself. It's like my family and my coworkers and the people I'm around. And like, okay, I'll try to just, you know, generally, you know, throw a battery of love, you know, at them, you know, like, oh, I'm just going to love these people like crazy. And, you know, like, that's not a bad idea. Like, I think that application is fantastic. But to say, you know what, like, love one another, practice at core group.
Yeah.
You know, here are some people you can practice on. And like it is that. A defined, like you said, you know, programmatic avenue that's being provided by the church to say, okay, we're going to connect you with these people and you guys are just going to love one another.
Yeah.
And that comes with all of the pains and the bumps and the sort of messiness that comes with trying to love other people in general.
Sure.
But it's a great way to a great place to practice it.
It is, and I would add to that, it's also a great way for you all or we all as groups to then turn outward and love others, right?
Right.
As a group, in a unified sense, to go to Brandon Towers and build relationships with the folks that are living there, or to our whole group to go down to the fellowship hall on a Sunday morning and say, we'll take brunch this morning and serve as a group and have this sort of like miniature, because what the groups really are miniature churches within the church, right? And they're a huge opportunity for Eastside as a whole to mobilize to get things done in terms of social justice, in terms of loving our neighborhood, and how can we impact or enable the groups to sort of do an inventory to say, like, how is our group uniquely gifted to do justice, to do mercy in this season?
So talk about that also in terms of like the mobilization and the strategy of that, because I think you mentioned that that's sort of our way to mobilize the church. And I think that that's exactly right. You get a bunch of people together on a Sunday, and even if you give your most impassioned, most inspiring kind of words from the pulpit, it doesn't necessarily give birth to sort of, you know, 50 people standing up and like doing something about it next week, right? And so core groups, again, offer that avenue to take that and make it real and practice it. What does that mean for a church like Eastside and any other church out there in terms of the strategy of that, of mobilization and the structure of how, you know, care happens in a church and things like that?
I'll give you an example and then I'll fill in with the care piece. So one of the best semesters when we were the most organized and we had really good buy-in from the groups, what ended up happening that semester was each group took a Sunday and covered the Sunday. At that time, it was a Sunday lunch meal. So we didn't have to ask for volunteers. It was all covered by groups that semester. And that was a really neat way of saying, okay, see, when we mobilize in these smaller groups, we can get stuff done.
Yeah.
The other piece to that mobilization is in terms of congregational care. And, you know, I've shared with you, Ed, and a lot of people know this stat, but in terms of organizations, when one leader tries to, in a one-to-one fashion, tend everyone in the organization cannot really get over 120 or 130 people. That's also true in churches. So if Tim is trying to one-on-one tend to everyone, our church is going to stay, you know, smaller than I think we would like it to for our 36,000 square foot building that we need. So what groups do is we teach our core group leaders to basically do pastoral care for and with their groups. And we see being in a group is one of the ways you receive care at Eastside. So when something's going on in your life, your core group leader's praying for you, praying with you, and then handing that up to the leadership, letting us know what's going on in your life. But it allows us to scale the ministry of the church. So it's not just one lead pastor trying to do everything one-on-one, but it sort of like hands the ministry to the congregation and allows us to do ministry with one another. Does that make sense?
It totally makes sense. I think it makes a ton of sense. You know, one other thing I'll throw out there on core groups that I know I've experienced over the years and participating with Eastside is that they have a... they have a depth to them and a permanence to them. Like you mentioned, we are on the semester schedule and we always encourage, you know, mixing up the groups. And sometimes we spur that on intentionally to because there are various reasons to do that. But there's something about the permanence of both the relationships made in those groups, as well as one of the things that I know many churches struggle with is deepening the spiritual growth of the members of the church. That's usually the harder thing. You know, like you talk about, like, you know, various denominational churches, small urban churches, mega churches, Saddleback, Willow Creek, etc. And you know, they might be great at getting people in the door, engaging them, and getting them through like that, those initial stages of kind of a life cycle of a person at a church.
Yeah.
And then it drops off. It's really difficult to keep growing and to you know, keep on challenging people when they feel like, oh yeah, you know what, like I love God and I really feel inspired by the worship here and I'm going to go ahead and make a commitment to this church. After that moment, it tends to be kind of a valley for a lot of churches in terms mm-hmm. of engagement. And I think that what I found about core groups that's really interesting is the way that people may come in from all sorts of different places and different positions and different moments in life in terms of their engagement with the church, right? Mm-hmm. Like some people come in and they're like, well, I haven't been going to church for 10, 15 years and I'm right. coming back and I just needed to find a smaller group of people where I can actually get to know someone's name. Other people are like, I've been churched my whole life. Some people are like, this is my first month at Eastside. Other people are like, "That this is my fifth year at Eastside." And, but I don't think that the value of the group gets diminished at all, because that's just kind of how the group works, you know? And there's something for everybody. You're walking together with life. And that's how you can continue to further and foster and deepen, you know, spiritual growth and engagement with members, you know, once they get past that initial stage.
Yeah. And one of the images I want us to push really hard this fall with groups is the whole idea of iron sharpening iron.
Right.
But the iron, for to sharpen the other iron, has to be close enough to actually do that. So there's something about this closeness, this intimacy that allows us to push one another on our spiritual journeys and to prod one another.
It's like you can't sharpen iron unless the iron is touching.
Yeah, right? You like got to put it in a room together,
you
right?
You can't wave it from across the room and nothing will happen. Yeah,
exactly. Absolutely. And I think there's just something about putting 12 people in a living room together, opening up the Bible and talking about it, that does something different than happens in a sermon on a Sunday morning. And I just think it's really important for us to come together in those ways and to put ourselves, you know, it may not be magic every week, and that's fine, but there may be other weeks where there's this massive breakthrough that somebody has in the relationship with God because of a conversation. And if you look at the life and ministry of Jesus, he was always having conversations with people. Yep. He'd have big conversations with large crowds, then he'd pull away to his disciples and he'd have private conversations with them, and he would push them and he would ask them questions, and when they were wrong, he would, you know, scorn them. No, I'm just kidding. But the other piece is we intentionally don't call these community groups like some of the mega churches do, because we feel like that sets them up to just be about a social club. And that was not Wesley's vision for groups when he started them. It was about spiritual formation. It was about discipleship. We want there to be a fellowship aspect. That's super important, but that's not the primary goal of groups. Groups are about growing in your relationship with God. I think it was either Saddleback or Willow Creek. They did this massive study, this is probably a decade ago now, of their small group ministry. And they realized at the end of that study that the way they had set their groups up, it really was just about fellowship. People were not growing through the groups, and they completely redid the ministry so that it would be about discipleship. And so we actually originally named them growth groups. We changed the name to core groups because we want the idea of those in these groups are kind of the core discipling people at Eastside. So
You know, that's interesting, and I think that again, that's spot on, just because the danger with community as the primary objective is that it engenders a false sense of accomplishment, right? There's this idea that, oh yeah, you know what? There's this great group of people and I'm really connecting. And again, that is an important element of it. People come, you know, it's human nature to desire to belong. Yep. And I think that is something that's written into our DNA and into the way that we interact with each other. We are social beings. And frankly, a lot of times when it's a place like Atlanta where people are transients and are new to the city, and it's a great place to connect. And I think that that's great. It cannot be the end. And I think that that false sense of accomplishment is that, oh yeah, I've got this great group of people and they're with me. And that's like a huge benefit, but that cannot be the end of it, because there is this, you know, that's like two, if you go to the iron sharpening iron metaphor, it's like two pieces of iron just being bundled up together. And you're like, well, this is great. I've got some other iron around me. But that's not the sharpening part. You know, that's not the actual, you know, the space to challenge and the space to comfort and to really share deeply. And so maybe, you know, what we can close with for this session is I'd be interested in your thoughts on ways for a person to get the most out of their core group. Like, what are some best practices, or what are some tips or pieces of advice for people to kind of get the most out of a core group?
Well, these are all going to be really obvious, but you know, I think the first one is high commitment. You know, if you're going to join the group, go to the group and make it and commit to doing it for the semester, and don't miss, because the groups that have the least life transformation are the ones that have members who are just not passionately dedicated.
You know, hearkening back to John Wesley, wasn't there like a fee or like a penalty if like you were a few minutes late to a group?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
it was hardcore.
Commitment was the core of that.
To the extreme of legalism.
Legalism, yeah.
We don't want to go there, but really it's bad for the culture of your group if you miss, and it really hurts the group. So commit to being there and say no to other things to be at your group. I would say prepare. You know, listen to the podcast before you get there. Come with questions. Come ready to talk, and come, you know, ready to engage and interact. Pray. I cannot overemphasize the groups that pray together are some of the strongest. Pray for one another. Pray for the church. Pray for God to speak through your discussions. But make sure there is always prayer taking place at your groups. And what I would also encourage is, you know, Jesus had the 12, but then he had the inner circle of Peter, James, and John. So consider finding someone in your group, preferably the same gender, that you would meet one-on-one with occasionally and have an even deeper conversation with them, and maybe even have set up some kind of accountability with maybe one member within your group. And I think that's something that we've talked about, maybe encouraging the groups to do this fall. Right. How about you? What do you think?
You know, I share all of those things. I think that that's spot on. The one thing I would just add to that is to be vulnerable and to share openly. Yeah. I think, you know, core groups are not meant to be group therapy. So it's not to, you know, to bring everything that you've got, you know, going on in your life and just kind of dump it on other people. But absolutely share. And be really raw and as authentic as you feel like you can be with sharing. And then, you know, the flip side of that is when other people share with you, you know, receive and hear that and respect it. And, you know, core groups have at our church, you know, like a basic level of confidentiality that, you know, really governs everything that happens inside of there, and respect that. And do whatever you can to make an environment where other people want to share. That's, I think, critical. You know, where I've been a part of core groups, sometimes it's been just a lively discussion because we've got a bunch of very smart people, and it becomes like a marketplace for ideas. And that's great. I think that's awesome. Yeah. And that's, again, also really valuable. But sometimes that is kind of like an alternative to really getting deep into someone's own life,
right?
And saying like, well, here's what I'm dealing with, or here's where I'm finding it difficult to love other people, like my boss or whatever, you know? Yeah. And really, or I'm really struggling with XYZ things, or I'm really having questions around ABC things. I feel like core groups are the right, are such a valuable, kind of precious forum for that type of engagement that really is not necessarily available in a lot of other places in the church. Take advantage of that. You know, understand that there's really something to be gained here. You'll get out of it what you put into it.
And that's so true.
You know, that would just be the advice, is to share and make it really welcoming for other people to share.
Love it.
Cool. Well, I think that wraps us up here. You know, there's so much more that we can talk about, but I appreciate the time, Tim, and we'll catch you all next time.
And just a quick aside, Ed and I will be creating questions for your group to go along with the podcast week in and week out. So you can expect to get those the weeks leading into your groups. Thanks, y'all, for being here.
Thanks so much.